Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Jeff Pedowitz of the Pedowitz Group. Welcome to Ignite Demand Generation on Blog Talk Radio. Every month, this innovative series delivers proven ideas, techniques, and examples on how you can deliver a measurable contribution to your company. The content for this series is provided by a wide array of nationally recognized experts. Each issue, whether through email series or Blog Talk Radio, provides you with practical insights you won't find anywhere else. For more information on Ignite Demand Generation, please visit our website at www.pedowitzgroup.com. And now for today's program, I would like to welcome Bill Price, President and Founder of Driver Solutions. Bill founded Driver Solutions in September 2001 after serving as Amazon's first Global Vice President of Customer Service. He also co-founded the 10-country Linebridge Global Alliance to help build their clients' customer service strategies and improve operational performance, and chairs the 34-company Global Operations Council that he formed in 2002 to share best practices and worst experiences. Bill started his career with McKinsey in its San Francisco and Stockholm offices, working on what turned into In Search of Excellence, was then Chief Operating Officer at an early IVR service bureau, ACP, which MCI eventually acquired. He then built MCI's call center services automation, consulting, and agent outsourcing divisions, and was named one of the first call center pioneers in 1997. Bill is a frequent keynote speaker, graduate school CRM instructor, and advisory board member. His first book, The Best Service is No Service, will be published in March 2008 by Wiley & Sons. He graduated from Dartmouth College and the Stanford Graduate School of Business and lives in Bellevue, Washington. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Hi, thank you very much, Jeff.
So, Bill, in your latest book, The Best Service is No Service, you describe a paradigm shift that moves the emphasis from accepting demand to challenging demand for customer-initiated contexts. Tell us a little bit more about that shift.
Sure. Well, most companies, Jeff, over the years have done a pretty good job doing what we call coping with demand. They plan, schedule, monitor, do customer sat surveys, etc. But they make a fundamental mistake. They assume that demand is going to be coming in at some direct proportion to revenues or customer counts, and they don't really sit back and say, well, why did we get those contacts? Is there a better way to handle some of those contacts than actually have them come into our call center or our contact center? And so that's what we're pointing out, is that there are better ways. They're cheaper for the company. They're more effective for the consumer, for the end user. And they're just better overall for the company.
So what do you think some of the biggest challenges that are facing companies today as they're really battling for customer loyalty?
I think the biggest challenge is cost pressure. Every company's under severe cost pressure. Whether we're in a recession or not is sort of semantics. Every company is under tremendous pressure to conserve their capital and their operating costs. And so as a result of that, they say that they're customer-centric. They say they want customer loyalty, but they wind up following the bottom line way too frequently and too closely.
So what are some examples of companies that really practice what they preach? I mean, if you had to talk about some world-class companies that give great customer service and maybe even spend the money and put in the processes to do it, who would they be?
Well, there are about 50 companies that David and I profile in our book. Some of them are just short snippets, and some of them are much longer case studies. But I'll just point out maybe one or two of them really quickly. I mean, one of them is a vacuum cleaner company in the UK called Dyson's. They actually are now retailing in the US as well. And Dyson's really prides itself on having vacuum cleaners that really work. And so they've actually announced in the UK they've closed one of their two or maybe three call centers because they don't need them anymore. Kind of like the Maytag repairman notion for the ads in the US. So Dyson's done a great job. People love the Dyson's product. It actually is very rugged, and they don't need to call for service or support or updates. That's one company that we come across. Another one is Kingfisher Airlines in India. That is a startup airlines, high-end startup airlines that was formed a few years ago, and they pride themselves on really listening to the customer and putting in place better check-in processes, better ways to handle complaints that come in from their customers, with a wide-open invitation on their website to email their chairman if you have any issues whatsoever. And the other example, the third one I'll give you, is the place where I used to work back at Amazon, where Amazon has been focused on this for a long, long time. was already working on it when I joined in 1999. When I left at the end of 2001, even had more processes to figure out better ways to do self-service on the web, put some self-service on an IVR system, but more fundamentally to eliminate the need for the contact in the first place, to root out the mistakes or the confusion in the shipping process or in the marketing communication so that customers didn't need to contact the company.
Now, is it all about cost reduction and efficiency, or can call centers be used to drive revenue as well?
They clearly can be used to drive revenue, and so when I get into debates quite often on panels and in other discussions about is the contact center a cost center or a revenue center, and I equivocate in the middle to say it's really a value center. It's trying to bring value back to the company. That value could be in the form of cost reduction, but it also could be listening to the customer and figuring out what the customer is saying through phone calls or emails or chat sessions, whatever the channel might be. Customers are very frequently eager to provide feedback, negative or positive feedback, suggestions or complaints. And getting the contact center right in the middle of that with the owners, as we call them, around the enterprise can really provide great value. I mean, clearly call centers, contact centers can be a pure revenue-generating operation. They can cross-sell, they can upsell, they can take sales. But most contact centers aren't that way. 85 to 90% of contact centers are in the support business. They're not in the sales business. And even so, they can provide value by, again, listening to their customers and providing feedback in the enterprise.
So you've definitely run customer service at some impressive companies. We mentioned Amazon earlier, also MCI. What are some of the major lessons and insights you've picked up along the way?
I think the first one is that customer service needs to be the heartbeat of the operations of the company. Now, I say that as a proud operations person who now does consulting to this field, but if the contact center isn't the heartbeat, in other words, if it's shunted off to the side, if it's outsourced and forgotten, if it's managed by folks that are purely cost conscious, meaning let's try to cut the time of the contacts rather than do the fundamental things we've talked about. If any of those happen, then the company is in trouble. So the opposite is what really needs to happen. Putting the customer service operation at the heartbeat means that their voice is heard within the enterprise, that they are given the right investments in listening technologies and CRM-type tools. Things like customer contact history, one of the things that MCI and Amazon did very good job of doing, and many of my clients don't even have today, is having full contact history on the agent's desktop when that call starts or when that email starts, to know the history of the communications that customer has had with the company. And if you don't have that, I'll go on the flip side again, if you don't have that, then the company winds up being a disadvantage. The customer knows the contacts, but if the company doesn't, then it really can't service the customer very well.
So why do you think so many companies view the call center as a cost center or something to control and manage versus something that's strategic?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it comes down to an age-old mistake that companies have made where they see the call center as a production part of the company or part of the production operation side of the company. And most operations production groups are managed for cost. Clearly, there's a quality component. You can't just pump out products if they're not good quality. But in general, if you view a contact center as a part of an operations production mindset, then it turns out to be managed in a very different way than what we're promoting. If, on the other hand, the contact center is part of a marketing department or maybe reports to the CEO, perhaps has and therefore has a seat at the table with the executives, then it's a very different proposition. Then the contact center, the call center, the customer service group in general is really seen as a valuable partner. So it often comes down to where it reports, who leads it, and what are the metrics under which it is it's managed.
So how can marketers leverage customer satisfaction in the call center to drive more demand for some of their products and services?
Well, one of the best things is just to listen to the customer contacts. I have several passages in the book, and I talk very, very widely about how one of your best examples as a marketeer, one of your best examples of a focus group is actually the constant stream of customer contacts that come in. So take recorded calls and listen to them. Take a look at email threads to find out what customers are saying and doing. At Amazon, we had a really wonderful program that a number of our clients have now put in place whereby marketing managers can get copied frequently, get blind copied frequently on email responses. So a customer sends an email in, it has a marketing content or a question about pricing or some competitive intelligence, whatever the theme might be. When the customer service center replies to that email, it sends a blind copy into the mailbox of, let's say, the head of marketing or the director of market research, and they can see verbatim what the customer is saying, what the company has said and has replied in return, and can start getting a sense of, gee, maybe there's a pattern here. Maybe our customers are upset with our pricing because it's too confusing. Or maybe our competitors have a really slick way that they've now introduced to handle returns or handle upgrades, whatever the topic might be. Gee, let's dig into that some more. And then the corollary of that is to actually sit down with customer service agents and with the managers of them and find out real-time what customers are saying. Do some double-jacking, some side-by-side observations, and find out what's really happening in the operations.
So I know, back to the cost argument for a minute, there's been a lot of debate lately over whether or not call centers should go overseas, should they stay here, questions about quality, questions about service.
Right.
What should companies think about when they're considering outsourcing? Is this still a viable option?
I think outsourcing is definitely a viable option, especially where the company doesn't have the skills or the capacity to handle the growing demand. Again, the demand that we advocate challenging and turning into self-service and elimination. But nonetheless, if you don't have the skills and capability, it's quite expensive to set up a modern-day contact center operation. And the second advantage is channel outsourcing. A lot of companies do a good job handling their phone contacts, but they're relatively new to email, chat, or text message communications. And there are outsourcing firms that have specialized in those forms of communications, those channels. And so we think there's a good value, a good opportunity in that. And the third one is if you're in very high-cost locations yourself, it just may not be prudent anymore to set up or to expand an operation. You know, if your headquarters is in Chicago or suburban Atlanta or California, places where the cost basis is high, it's going to be difficult to find employees at a reasonable cost who would work in a call center, contact center. So finding an offshore location, it could be near shore in the Caribbean, could be offshore in the Philippines or India or Africa. That may just be the best way to manage the overall cost basis. So we have a thriving interest in outsourcing. We think there's a lot of sense to outsourcing, but you just need to be careful about why you're doing it and figure out where you want to go.
So finally, Bill, what words of wisdom would you provide our listeners out there if they're really starting to think about how to transform their call center operations over the coming year?
Well, the first thing I would do is to inspect pretty carefully the role of the contact center in your enterprise, in your organization. To whom does it report? To which group does it report? What are the metrics under which it's being managed? If it's being managed purely on cost, without some of these best service notions that we've described here, then the tendency is going to be to push for faster handle time, faster handle times or more contacts per hour, and that's really the wrong route to go. So I'd first step back and figure out what is the role and purpose of the contact center. And then secondly, I'd start experimenting with analyzing the customer contacts. Start scoring every contact that you get that comes in. Figure out whether that's a contact that you want or not. We've got some mechanisms for it in the book. Is it a valuable contact or an irritation to you, and is it valuable or an irritation to your customers? And you'll find out that quite a few of the contacts you don't really want. There's a better place for them either by self-serving them or giving proactive alerts on those issues or eliminating the fundamental need for the contact. So I'd look at those as the first two steps along the way, and then you'll get a lot more from the other principles that are in the book.
Well, thanks a lot for being on the show today, Bill.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.